Hello and very much welcome. We are so happy to see so many of you have gathered here for this talk. Our next speaker will be Thomas, who is a security researcher and a low-level hardware hacker. And he will give this very interesting talk about Windows BitLocker screwed without a screwdriver, where he will dive into how you can bypass BitLocker encryption on a fully up-to-date Windows 11 system and touch upon vulnerabilities that Microsoft had been unable to patch since 2022. Thomas will demo his exploit, and he will dive into why this vulnerability has been so difficult to fix. Thank you so much, and give it up for Thomas.
All right, let me put that to full screen. No, that's not the correct full screen. That's full screen. Perfect. Okay. Yeah, amazing to see so many of you here. I'm talking to you about Windows BitLocker. You probably haven't seen me before. I'm Thomas. I'm mainly like a CTF player. That's how I like entered the whole scene here. Play with others, play with SauerCloud a bit. Also, by now, like founded own company with a bunch of my CTF colleagues. And I'm also like a member of this, a cybersecurity challenge. This kind of like introduced me to all of this topic, and like a member of and I love low level. I love low level security. I love hardware security. I love like the boot process. This is something which like really kind of like I fell into rabbit hole last year. Picked up a motherboard, like looked at chips, looked at pins, looked at whatever, tried to understand how secure boot works, tried to understand how BitLocker works. And then kind of like a challenge came along. And for that, I want to give like a little teaser. And this little teaser is like two questions. The first question is like, okay, I have like Windows 11. I have it up to date. And like there's this thing called device encryption. And like, if I enable this, they tell me, okay, like your hard drive is encrypted. Like, if your device is lost or stolen, like you have some protection there. And like, the two questions I have there is like, okay, like they claim it's like secure. Like, what does it do? Like, is it possible to like without a password access the files? And like, the second question, do they like need to open the device for an attack? Because like, I already knew like there are some hardware attacks where like if you open the device and sniff some buses and like access the memory and stuff, like that's probably possible. But like, what can you do like without opening the device? There will also be like a setting where like Celebrate or like law enforcement or like some other people like came along and just like take your smartphone or like your laptop for a while and just like plug something in and like something happens. Like I was always like, how do they do that? And then came along a competition called Real World CTF. Real World CTF is like an amazing CTF. That was like the sixth edition in like 2024. And in that CDF, there was this challenge called Grandma's Laptop. And like no one managed to solve that challenge. I looked at it for like a couple of hours and was like really frustrated because like you had this QEMU and like inside of it was like a Windows 11 with like secure boot enabled and like stuff. And like the hardware was encrypted. And you just like had this login screen. And in the login screen, you just like had to enter the password and the flag was on the desktop. And you had like QEMU. You could like add devices to it and like you could like influence the boot process, you could access the BIOS and stuff, but like the hardware was encrypted, like, and it didn't have the password. Like, no one managed to solve that. And then after the challenge was over, like the author published this this hint to like the BitLocker attacks GitHub repo. And this is always like this was like my entry point into this whole topic. Because like this repo is great, it's like good overview, but like very little like actual like tutorials or like background information. So like I really like dove deep and like figured okay like why would like an up-to-date Windows be like broken? Like that kind of like felt really wrong to be able to detect that remotely. In our talk here, we have like short agenda. We look at BitLocker and like talk a bit about what unattended unlock is. Then we're gonna talk about how we're gonna break that, software only. We will live demo that. Got my second laptop for that. And then why isn't this fixed? This is really like for me like the most interesting part here. Like what led to like this bug still being present? And like finally like what can you do about it if you want to have more secure devices? How does BitLocker work? This is like a slide just like taken from like Microsoft documentation. And it goes like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Someone tries to like access the disk offline. They have some issues. If the device is also stolen, that's like really helpful. And they split it up in two different functionalities. One of the functionality they call device encryption. That's the stuff that basically enabled by default on your Windows machines. This is stuff Windows Home supports, and many newer laptops just like have enabled, which is like actually great to have like finally encrypted storage by default on Windows. And there's this other thing they call like BitLocker drive encryption. This is just like more advanced, more configurable, where you have like a lot of knobs to like tune things. And that's only available on like more like the enterprisey versions, like professional versions and stuff. Like the normal Windows Home doesn't have access to that. You need additional licenses. Yeah, so like, how exactly does BitLocker work? That's like, you could like hold two talks about that on its own. So it's just like a very, very high level overview. There are lots of great resources on there. You just like take the hard disk. In BitLocker, the hard disk is basically split into two regions. So you have like the first region, the green one, that's just like the bootloader, that is still unencrypted. So that's just plain text, some software that can run, and that software can then basically open up the other parts. The other parts are then this so-called volume master key. This is basically just like the key to the castle when you're talking BitLocker. And then there's also this thing called full volume encryption key. And then you finally have encrypted data. And then if you look at like how does like an unlock process for like BitLocker work, we have like a couple of steps. The first step here, our bootloader, which is unencrypted, takes like this encrypted master key and decrypts it. And then we have like this volume master key in plain text. Like step two, we take this volume master text in plain text and we use that to decrypt the full volume encryption key. And the full volume encryption key in turn then can like read all the data. So like the full volume encryption key just stays in memory. The volume master key likely as well. And just like on demand, whenever some process, some file, some whatever wants to read, wants to write, dynamically in the background, the encryption and decryption is done. So like this later chain is like obvious and easy, but like the core part here, the interesting stuff is like, how does this beginning part work? Like how is like the first volume master key decrypted? And that's where like this component in the computer called the TPM comes into play. It's the Trusted Platform Module. And like the idea here is like this boot should be really user friendly. Like we're talking about this device encryption, which like has to be enabled on every device by default. You can't like add like additional password prompts for the users, which they then forget and have to like recovery. Way too complicated. Has to happen automatically. And TPM, we'll talk about later what that exactly does and how it achieves this. Is like a tool to make that work. And that's exactly this unattended unlock flow. So like you can do BitLocker in a different way, but this is the default. Unattended unlock is exactly this. You just turn on the computer, and it automatically unseals the disk encryption for you if like no hacker is present. How does it do that? This is basically just like the next couple steps we do here. Again, the disk is fully encrypted. The TPM unseals it. And it does that by using secure boot. Secure boot, probably all of you have been annoyed by that a number of times. At least I have. But like here, Microsoft actually uses that to like derive some security that says like if we have secure boot, then we can like unseal the disk. And like if the attacker like manages to break secure boot, then we have an issue. Okay. Now, how does it work? I have like a happy case here. When Windows starts booting, like numbers, stuff happens. This is only the relevant part. At first, we have like this huge platform UEFI stuff. This is like the BIOS boots, RAM gets initialized, CPU gets initialized, whatever. We don't care about that. Nothing like security relevant for this talk is there. Execution shifts over to like the Windows Boot Manager. This is actually like the crucial component we are looking at here. This is just like the larger blob on the right there. And the Boot Manager firmware is just like an EFI file that reads the so-called boot configuration data, BCD. It's just like a grub config or like whatever you're used to like when you're in the Linux world. And this just like says, which partitions do you have? Do you have like Windows on there? What files do you need to boot? Do you have like some boot arguments there? Is this like a recovery operation or like whatever? Just like a lot of like boot configuration. And like from this boot configuration, It then determines like the default boot entry, or like it gives you like an option and you choose one. And once you've chosen one, it then goes ahead and sees, okay, like the bootloader, boot manager firmware, unencrypted. But like I could put in the boot configuration data that I want to boot from an encrypted hard drive. And then it goes, okay, yeah, the partition I want to boot from is encrypted. I am now going to unseal the volume master key. So this is really like kind of the crucial step here. The Windows Boot Manager unseals the volume master key with help of the TPM. And that just succeeds because like Windows set it up that way. And then it boots like the kernel. The kernel then shifts whatever into user space and gives it like this nice Windows login prompt to say like, please user, enter the password. So like the user has this password. But at the time the user is entering his password, the normal login screen, the disk is already unsealed in the background. So like in memory, there is already this volume master key. And then there is this other case, this unhappy case. Because like the boot might fail. We might have some broken options there. Maybe like, I don't know, the disk just got corrupted by some cosmic rays, whatever. There are numerous reasons this could fail. And it might fail after we have already have this decryption key. So like the bootloader goes ahead and says, okay, I want to boot this encrypted hard drive, so I decrypt it. And then it sees, wait, I can't actually boot that. Let's like take a step back and like go into recovery flow. And now it has to like wipe all of the encryption keys it has already derived from memory, all of the decrypted encryption keys. And then it just tries again. So like it has a recovery entry and like goes to like recovery boot menu, whatever, tells you like you need to run some recovery here. I'm just repairing things, which most of the time just does nothing. Yeah. And okay, that how does the exploit work? That's actually like really simple. I mean, if you look at that, this I kind of already like highlighted in green and red. The most obvious case where we would just like forget something here is just like this wipe all these encryption keys. If you don't do that, there's this issue that the recovery flow then might be something totally different, and it could still read the decryption keys from memory. So like the actual exploit here, like honestly, not that interesting. This bug is called BitPixie, and it's exactly that. It's like this case you just forget to clear the memory after you have the key and just like pass on execution to like some kind of like not completely arbitrary but like attacker controlled territory. It's CVE 2023, whatever, and it was not discovered by me. Like this is an old bug, discovered in August 2022. It was disclosed in February, but like it's still exploitable today. So this is what really tripped me up while doing this, because like guys, like 2022, like it's always 2025 now. Why can I still decrypt BitLocker? And like why is it like now the default? And like there's like no mention of that anywhere. I was like really really surprised by that. BitPixie already kind of hints at the exploit mechanism because like Microsoft of course isn't stupid. Like they don't forget to delete the keys in all cases. There's just like this one special case where they forgot to delete it. And there was like via Pixie boot. So like this, if you do a recovery option via network boot, then they forget to delete the key. Okay. Let's start with like some demo time here. I have another laptop here. This other laptop, I have connected with like a capture card. So I have this nice windowed projector by OBS, which I can drag somewhere. Okay, yeah. Okay, that works perfectly. And like this is like the screen from the other laptop, just like captured via capture card. I've also connected both of these devices with a LAN cable that will come into play for like the network boot later. Of course, now the thing goes into hibernation. I can just like log into the demo user here. I can maybe make that a bit bigger. Okay, so like this is now my test device. Maybe first thing, let's open like an admin terminal and do like msinfo. MS-info just like throws you some nice stuff about the current build. It's just like Windows 11 Home, just like recently installed. This is like the build version. It's like 23H2, I think. So like, I didn't test with 24, but like, if we go to updates, if I can type, it tells me like you're fully up to date. Last checked today, like 1928. This is like 1 minute ago. It's so, like there are just fully up to date Windows. Relevant parts here is like secure boot is enabled, like PCR7, we are bound, whatever that means, we'll figure that out later. And then way down here, we have like device encryption support meets prerequisites. When you want to do this exploit, this part is really important. While I was just like playing around with KEMU and whatever, if this doesn't say meet prerequisites, the option for device encryption just isn't there. Like Windows 11 is kind of finicky with like needs TPM2, needs to have like this modern standby support stuff, whatever. Then there are some PCI DMA devices. In a lot of configurations, if you're playing around with like weird stuff, this just doesn't work and like device encryption isn't available. But like on all like normal laptops right now, it's available. And like let's check here. I can go device encryption settings, and just like device encryption is enabled. We can look at that like a bit more technically. We can go back to our PowerShell, and like if we go manage BDE, it's like manage BitLocker disk encryption. We can get the protectors for the C hard drive. So the protectors are like multiple different things, like just like execute here. You can see we have two protectors here. We have a numerical password. This numerical password is like the BitLocker recovery key. The BitLocker recovery key is like always enrolled by Windows to make sure like, and they kind of force you to like print it or like store it somewhere safe, or upload it to the cloud to your Microsoft account if you're signed in there. And it's just like this long password. Like this is actually the password, and you can use that to decrypt the drive. But we have another way. This is this TPM, and it says we have a PCR validation profile of 7.11, and it uses secure boot for integrity validation. It's like they can actually see like if you want to like find out like how your Windows is protected, that's a good way to do it, to see what protectors you have enrolled. Okay, so what I'm going to do now. Is I will go to reboot the system. And I don't know if you know that, you can hit like shift and then press restart. And that will boot Windows into like some kind of like recovery thing. Windows is sometimes a bit slow, and this might take a while. So I will just like change back to the next slide to talk to you a bit about how... this is on top, that's nice. Yeah, so like this starts booting. And like we can look at like this is the rough exploit flow, which I will now like present here. We will start with like pixie booting some stuff because that's the way you trigger the exploit. And then all of the stuff down there, this is basically then the details of the exploit. And I have like individual slides for each of the steps, so I won't go through them right now. But what I will do is change to the next slide. It actually went kind of quick this time. Let us hide this thing for now. Perfect. Okay. We need pixie boot. We need network boot. Otherwise, this bug just won't happen. If you have ever touched pixie boot, you know it's like really annoying. You need to have like DNS and then next server and like DHCP and like TFTP server. I never got that working for my Raspberry Pi. But like then again, the Raspberry Pi was on my home network, and like I didn't want to like reconfigure all of my router and stuff. I just kind of wanted it to work, and like that was difficult. In this case, we just like put a LAN cable into one PC, and in the other PC, this actually gets quite simple. Because DNS mask is like a great tool. This is just all in one for us. So we can just use DNS mask, tell it like this is the network interface, and this gets just like external dongle. We can give it an IP range. We can say it, okay, boot this boot manager firmware IFE, like the Windows bootloader. We can enable TFTP, so like it has this capability to serve additional files for the boot process. And we give it like a TFTP root directory where it can like read files from. And this is just like a directory listing of the TFTP root we are serving here. Why are we booting our own boot manager? This is actually part of like the two-step process because like Windows, of course, like I was always saying like this bug isn't patched. That's kind of a lie. New boot managers have this bug patched, but we can just use an old one. There's just like nothing stopping us. And there's this amazing resource called like WinBindex. You can just go there and say like I want boot manager firmware IFE, and it just tells you okay here like. Versions from like, I don't know, it doesn't even know the versions itself, but it gives you like a lot of old versions. And you can just like pick one old enough that happens to work. You can also like download some ISOs somewhere on the web and like pull out Windows boot managers from like Windows 8. These also turn out to work. But like WinBindex, I found like just like a great resource here. And like the reason this works is because like these are signed. We are working with Secure Boot here, as I mentioned earlier, and Secure Boot always checks signatures on binaries. And like these are all legit Microsoft bootloaders. They are all signed. So we can downgrade. Yeah, then we need this custom boot order. I already told you about earlier in the flow, if you remember, the BCD file. The BCD file specifies which thing you basically boot. And I also told you, if something goes wrong, it enters this recovery path. So we now need a BCD file. Pixieboot is really nice because like it loads this BCD file from this TFTP root. So like we can just provide an arbitrary BCD file. And we just serve it. And how to create this is like really finicky. There's like not a lot of documentation on BCD. And if something goes wrong, if you like configure something slightly weird, the Windows Boot Manager gives you a helpful like 0xc00042 error. And it's like, okay, what the fuck? You have like no idea what went wrong. So like you have to like choose kind of like an incremental approach and like change options one by one until it works. Or you have to like start reversing the Windows Boot Manager, which I actually didn't do. So like I haven't opened GitRob once on the Windows Boot Manager and was still able to like reproduce this exploit here. And one step further, how do we edit it? It's a tool called BCD edit. This is just like executing it normally. It just shows you a bunch of options. Not really that interesting here. Because like the other thing I told you before, we need a broken default option. We need the recovery flow to trigger for it to forget the VMK in memory. And then we need first to have the correct partition identified. And after it identified the correct partition, derived the volume key, we need to crash the boot process. This is actually really simple because we can just tell it, please boot slash on this encrypted partition. And turns out slash is not a valid kernel. So, I mean, it just says, okay, fuck it. I'm going to abort boot here and go the recovery key. What's a bit sneaky here, which like tripped me up at first, this BCD edit tool likes to show drive letters. So it says like it boots from C double point or like from D or whatever. These aren't actually S like C in the BCD file, but like as a partition GUID. And then you need to actually have this BCD file crafted for the computer you're actually attacking. But that's trivial to get. We can see that a bit later. So like nothing really stopping us here. We just need to be careful how we put this BCD file together. I think it's really helpful to just walk through that once in case you want to reproduce it, because that was really the annoying part. Actually, what we do is like we just take the original BCD from the computer we're attacking. This is just like not encrypted because like the bootloader isn't encrypted because it can't be. So the BCD is there in plain text. We can just like take it. Then we have to add a new application. It's just called Soft Reboot, and all of the four Dell whatever. This is just like some black magic ChatGPT generated to get the GUID into a variable. Then we create the new application we add there, and we tell it, okay, now boot Linux shim. We're still in secure boot. That's actually really annoying. It will come up later. So like for my exploit, I now shift like execution from like this Windows environment over to Linux. And I need to secure boot Linux. If you've ever done that, you know, you need like a shim for that. The shim is then from Debian or Ubuntu or whatever. It's just like a binary they provide and have also signed with Microsoft third-party keys. So we boot that. We tell it it's like a bootable device, and we tell it this Pixie soft reboot. This is like basically the most important line in this whole exploit, because like this is the code execution path where the bug is. Then we can say we want for like the normal default boot option, which is already there by default, we just break it. We enable recovery. We say if you recover, please boot like our Pixie soft reboot, whatever reboot, and we break it by setting the path to a slash. Yeah, and then we copy it over to like some other drive. We can do this via SMB in like multiple different ways. The arrows here, like these are the three important lines. in this flow. Okay, if we do that, we get BCD kind of looking like this. The arrow here again, there's this hidden option called /raw. This just like hides the drive letters and actually puts what's in there. So we can see here the HDGPT. This is like the signature of the disk we're booting. Okay. I was quite happy at this point. Because like I was doing this kind of in QEMU. And like in QEMU, I could just like freeze the system, dump the memory, scan the memory, and see like, hey, the VMK is in there. And I am in the process, in a position where I could get code execution. Yeah, it turns out that's still really annoying. So Linux plus secure boot, they have this thing called kernel hardening, and they enable it by default if the kernel is secure booted, at least for kernels that are signed. Yeah, I'm kind of still stuck. Kernel hardening disallows me from reading memory, and I need to read memory because like it's just like somewhere randomly in the memory is like well, your master key. So now I have a Linux booted, but I can't read the key, but I know it's in there. So that was kind of frustrating because I figured like I don't know, I'm using Linux, like I'm rude. Let me do what I want. We could probably also boot Windows here and like load a back.kernel driver or something that has a signature. But I went with Debian because I just like know way better, this is like what I just talked about lockdown mode. What's over here? Like this completely unreadable screenshot. These are kernel patches Debian applied to their kernel to make sure the lockdown mode has teeth. In the normal Linux kernel, like I think it has been upstream quite a lot of these patches, but like in the normal Linux kernel, there's an issue that there are like a lot of ways to read memory. You can go via ACPI tables, you can go via DMA of like some PCI devices, you can like insert K probes, you can KXEC another kernel. It's just like, tons of ways to read memory. But here, every single one that got known to read kernel memory, Debian put a patch in there. So they actually like cared about root not being able to read raw memory. But Linux kernel kind of like has its own set of exploits, and that's what I did. So in my exploit for Windows boot BitLocker, I actually booted Linux hardened mode and then exploit the Linux kernel. I found that quite great. The kernel I just the exploit I took because it was exploit ready to go on GitHub with a proof of concept, which I could just roll with to read the memory there. Okay. This is just like one last step. This is like the exploit code I adapted. Like it goes way on before and after that. Not really interesting. The only interesting part here is like I have these two memmem compares, where I just like look at the memory, kind of like in chunks, and like search for this needle, this FVEFS. So this is like an 8-byte needle. And every volume master key is in a struct that starts with this needle. So I can just like, when I'm Linux and can read raw memory, I just scan until I find one. But not only volume master keys have this needle, because like other BitLocker structs have as well. So then there's this second version check. The version needs to be like 03200100. And like if you find that, then you know like some bytes after that you found the volume master key. One final step. We now found the volume master key. We actually need to mount it. Linux has this tool called Dislocker. Dislocker, you can just like give this volume master key, and like it provides a fuse mount. Well, it creates a loop mount, and you can fuse mount that to actually make the files readable on Linux and also writable. So like you can whatever delete the user password, make some persistent changes to the disk, whatever you fancy. And I want to demo that now. I've already like booted the Linux PC into this thing here, the Windows one. And I also have another terminal. And this other terminal comes up right now here. Perfect. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to run this magic DNS mask command we saw previously. This is just like exactly what we saw before. I run DNS mask, I specify the interface, some DHCP ranges, tell it to boot the downgraded Windows Boot Manager, And then pointed to the Pixie TFTP directory I created, which contains the broken BCD file. Okay, I'm going to run that. I will have to enter a pseudo password. And now I'm going to go back to the other device, and I'm going to go, like, remember, I haven't, like, entered a password on this device if I'm the attacker. This reboot to like this recovery is always available after you just turn on the device. So I can just like say, okay, I want to use the device. And like here, like the Lenovo ThinkPad I'm using here has a lot of options. One of them, very helpfully, is Pixie Boot. So I'm just going to go to Pixie Boot. And like this test screen is just like, well, the screen is off. My capture card kind of likes that screen a lot. And what we're going to see come up here is Lenovo, just like, okay, BIOS, we don't want to interrupt it. And it will tell us it's going to Pixie boot. And that sometime later, we're going to see on the DNS mask side that it actually like sees some DHCP requests. And we're going to see that it's sometime now, probably, I don't know, maybe live demo will fail. But like it usually, oh no, takes a while. Perfect. Now we see here we have a lot of DNS stuff sent, DHCP stuff sent, and we told it should boot the downgraded boot manager. This just kind of like happened all in the background right now. This was all like very very quick, so like you couldn't see a lot there, unfortunately. But like what happened in the background there actually was that the downgraded Windows boot manager booted. It tried to boot from the normal hard drive, that failed. So it booted into recovery. The recovery was the Linux shim, and the Linux shim booted this grub. So now I'm in a grub that still has the volume master key in memory. And here I can just like boot some Debian with Alpine init RAMFS, because like actually like customizing Debian init RAMFSs I found kind of annoying. And Alpine has some great tooling around that. So I just went with that and like meshed the kernels together, because the Debian kernel, I needed to take the Debian kernel because it has secure boot. And I'm just going to boot the Debian. And this is another step that's just going to take a second, because TFTP is kind of like a slow protocol. And it just says here it's sending Linux right now. So like this is a kernel. This is just like a couple of megabytes. And TFTP has like no window sizes. So it waits for acknowledgments on every single packet going back and forth, which makes this protocol actually kind of slow for data transfer. But hey, that's what the Pixie guys went with. And it's actually like a really simple network protocol. Yeah, okay, perfect. Now we have like the standard Linux kernel boot, whatever you're all familiar with. It will soon drop into the init. Perfect. Now we can, it asks us for like a username. You can't really see that. I'm just going to put root. And now I'm logged in. Now I'm just in like fully memory system. We haven't like touched any disk or whatever. It's just like booted from the network. We are in this. And now I'm just going to go ls, and we have like a couple of files here. The interesting file here is like this pwn. We're going to look at that. This is exactly what was on the slide before. We're going to go run the exploit. We're going to sleep a bit. We're going to modprop some fuse. We're going to run disk locker, and we're going to mount it. Because like the partitions are sometimes different, this is like somewhat generic, and they can go like please boot. What's it? NVMe N1P3. Like this, on most default systems, always like the third partition out there. And like this, is the exploit already ran, printed the VMK. So like it printed a bunch of them that were wrong. This is the actual one that was right. You can see like VFEFS at the top. Now the sleep was over. After the sleep was over, we can see a bunch of like fuse mounting stuff. And now we can go into the mount directory, and we can go ls, and this is the decrypted Windows partition. All right, enough of that. I can close those now. Let me just recover my mouse here. Perfect. So like this is like another short summary of what you just saw. We downgrade boot manager, we trigger the broken recovery flow, we secure boot into Linux, we exploit the Linux lockdown mode to get the raw memory, and we have done like zero changes to the system. Like this is all just network only. We chose like a single option in like the Windows boot flow. We had to plug in network, and we had to use the keyboard. Just like the only access required for this. You can actually do that with like a single USB plug if you just like attach like a USB keyboard and like a USB network dongle. This is actually also really great because like we had to select Pixie Boot in the boot options. You can disable that into BIOS. Like a lot of like corporate environments, they tend to like only allow booting from like the default hard drive. They like have no Pixie Boot in there. But if you just plug in an external network dongle that's capable of Pixie booting, the BIOS is very helpful and like offers that as an option. It's like even if like disable the specific Pixie boot option, I can still do this attack. The only thing that I can do to prevent it is to actually disable the full network stack. It's like most BIOSes have this option to like disable all of networking in the BIOS. If you do that, then actually like Pixie boot just isn't possible no matter what device you plug in. And again, BitLocker had to be in like this unattended mode. So like if you have to like enter an additional password just for BitLocker, this won't work. All right. I found it really helpful to look at the Microsoft documentation again for that, because like they know kind of that these kind of attacks are possible. And like they distinguish between like two levels of attackers. This is word for word from Microsoft documentation. And they distinguish between like an attacker with limited physical access and an attacker with skill and lengthy physical access. So it's like not really either or, it's like this subset doesn't quite match. But they say with like limited physical access, you need to like either have the attacker doesn't use destructive methods and it doesn't use sophisticated forensics hardware or software. The question here is like, how sophisticated really was it what I had done here? Like, it took me a while to get it running during the CTF, like no one solved it. But like with these slides, reproducing this like isn't actually that much effort. So like the sophisticated is kind of arguable, but Microsoft's stance is like sophisticated is for an unsophisticated attacker, this pre-boot authentication set to TPM only is enough. If you're worried against like attacker with skill and lengthy physical access, go with like TPM with pin protector. But that's not available on Windows Home, so you have to like Windows Enterprise-y, Professional, whatever setting there. Okay. Yeah. So. Why does this thing work? Why wasn't Microsoft able to fix this? We need some background for that, unfortunately, into how the TPM and the secure boot stuff works. Why do we even want secure boot? I mean, two goals. We have measured boot and we have verified boot. And they are two fairly different things, actually. The verified boot stuff is like, I want to control what is allowed to boot. This is something you quite often encounter when you like have enabled secure boot and you plug in your Windows or your Linux USB stick, it just won't boot and you have to like go disable it. This is one part. The other part is measured boot, and this is like knowing what booted before me. And this is actually really, really helpful for here, because like here the Windows boot manager can determine like if it's like a legit boot manager and like no shenanigans happened before the Windows boot manager was booted. This kind of like trust, which like the Windows boot manager then wants to infer, is bootstrapped by the trusted platform module. And it's basically like a separate security computer in your computer, and it has like this very defined set of interfaces. It's just like different versions, 1.2, 2.0, they can like be in firmware, be in hardware. Like that doesn't really matter for these purposes. It's just like it's another computer. And it has two features which are relevant for us. It has PCRs, platform configuration registers, and it has some crypto ability. Platform configuration registers, PCR, whatever, are a tool to observe the boot process, kind of. Because what they do, they basically start off with like being all zero, and then some measurement can take place. The measurement might be Windows bootloader is booted. Here's the hash of the Windows bootloader that just was booted. Or it might be, I don't know, whatever. A lot of different measurements are there. And then whenever you take a measurement and put it into one of these PCRs, you take the previous value of the PCR, you add the measurement, you hash them, and you have a new value for the PCR. And you can just like chain that down. And the hash function, usually SHA-256, like pretty much resistant, good hash function. There isn't like no going back. And that's the crucial part. These PCRs only ever get set back to zero on cold reboots. As soon as you like boot the system, like the very early UEFI platform, whatever, already puts some values in there. And there's no going back. So, and if every part of the boot chain always puts some stuff in there, you can infer what booted before you. Resetting them, actually also an interesting attack vector, but like not really in scope here. This is what the PCRs look like on the Windows 11, just like after boot. You have like some, the bottom ones just aren't really used. The first seven, or the first eight ones, up to PCR 7, these are the early boot PCRs. Yeah, just like a bit about measurements I kind of already told you about. And then I wondered, like, okay, like there's this PCRs, okay, they got measurements and they're like, what actually goes in there? Like there's a lot of resources which are like really high level and just like say, okay, like this PCR goes into this data. I found that kind of like unsatisfying. So I went going a bit deeper and I found like some specifications. But then I figured like the specifications are like totally unreadable, so like I kind of stopped that. So like you are just gonna get the version I already read on the internet. I was kind of frustrated by. Sorry about that. We have like PCR 0. Firmware executable goes in there. This is just like the UEFI code or like the BIOS code or whatever. It changes when you update the BIOS. We have PCR 2. This is then if you have PCI cards, which provides some firmware. We have PCR 4. That's the bootloader. This is like the Microsoft bootloader, the boot manager firmware, which he actually downgraded. The hash of that goes into PCR 4, so like downgrades there. And PCR 7 is just all of secure boot. TPM logs are really great. We're looking at that. Every single event that gets into like a TPM PCR, it gets emitted into log. And you can just like see for here, you have PCR 7 and like some secure boot where you log the variable 1 into it. And you can actually like get a feel for like what data flows into the PCRs. The contents of them, especially for like the PCR 7, which is the secure boot stuff, is actually kind of interesting because this is a full public key hierarchy with like certificate chains. You have revocation lists. You have like all the kind of stuff that goes with it, and these all get measured into the PCRs. Here we have like the PK, this is a so-called platform key, that's some certificate. It's just like full key hierarchy. Microsoft has two different certificates, basically as like root of trust installed in many, many different mainboards. One of them is the first party certificate. That stuff signs everything from Microsoft. It's like every bootloader from Microsoft is signed with this one first party certificate. And then there's this third-party certificate that signs everything else. It's like every Linux shim out there that has a signature is signed by the third-party certificate by Microsoft. And that also kind of explains, like, if I boot with a third-party certificate, like, the boot process knows that it's a different certificate from the first-party certificate, even though both are allowed to boot. I now have a bunch of PCRs. What do I do with them? Well, I use them for unattended unlock. Because like I can have some great policies in there to seal some crypto stuff. So I can give the TPM, here's a secret. Please only give this secret back if PCR7 is exactly this value. And then that is what the Windows bootloader does. And like if I boot something else and I ask the TPM, please give me the secret back, it's just going to tell me, no, the PCR7 doesn't match because the certificate was different because you're just like a Linux shim and not the Windows bootloader. Why isn't this fixed? I mean, it's also kind of obvious, like we've seen PCR7 does the secure boot stuff, and secure boots all have the same certificate, so we can use an older bootloader. But the core question is here, why do we even use secure boot for this, right? Because we have different options. And this is actually what Microsoft also like encountered. They have like two different modes. This is the so-called legacy mode. Legacy mode pins on PCR registers 0, 2, and 4. And these are actually hashes of code. It's like no downgrade possible, hashes of code, that's secure. But that's also annoying because as soon as you do a BIOS update, your disk doesn't unseal anymore because now the hash is different. And they run into a lot of issues where like users complained and like they had to do recovery. So they kind of stopped that and went to new mode, just using PCR7 secure boot. And this is basically like the only PCR they're using right now to do security. for BitLocker. And then there's this additional thing called PCR 11. This is just like BitLocker custom stuff where they put a value in there once to have some replay protection. They noticed that was kind of bad and tried to fix it. Back in like the 2024.7 update, I was already planning to holding the talk here, and just like a colleague of mine went to me and like, it doesn't work anymore. I was like, well, what do you mean it doesn't work anymore? Like, they can't fix this. But like, it actually did. They added PCR4 to the BitLocker config. And by doing that, they now pinned on the hash and downgrades were impossible. Couple days later, a lot of headlines complaining, Windows mandatory update forces BitLocker recovery by mistake. Debatable if that was a mistake. In theory, of course, they know what PCR4 will be because Windows installs their own bootloader. So Windows knows the hash of the bootloader. So Windows can like lock the stuff to their own bootloader. So it should not trigger this. It should not trigger recovery. But in practice, like systems are complicated. And because systems are complicated, like the bootloader gets downgraded by some antivirus or like whatever, and like then system breaks. So like Microsoft is in this awkward position that like every external BIOS update, every like update to firmware, they don't predict breaks BitLocker if they do stuff like this. So they don't like to do it. They published something about that. They just say like, due to firmware incompatibility issues, we are going to disable this fix. Well, that's a tactic you can have. PCR7, public key certificate stuff, why don't we just revoke signatures of vulnerable bootloaders? This is like the logical next step, right? This is like how certificates are going to work. If something is broken, we revoke it with signatures. And that doesn't work. They were very, very wise and have like 32 kilobytes of revocation storage on like the BIOS, because like the BIOS needs to store the information. And like 1/3 of that was burned by like this boot hole vulnerability like in 2020 or something. And there was grub, because like grub is third party signed. Microsoft had to revoke it because like this bug was horrific. But now they have like burned all of the space, and they figure like it's not worth it to burn more of this space to fix like this specific like Pixie whatever attack, which is like a bit esoteric, maybe, I don't know. They want to like have some space available for like actually important revocations they might have to do. And we have like no version-based revocation until now. One thing they might do, okay, like, fuck it, we're just going to roll the certs. When I read that, I was like kind of amazed, actually. There's like this really great presentation from like the UEFI forum from fall of last year. They just went, okay, the current secure boot certificates expire in 2026. How about we not renew them and hand out new ones? My prediction is this is going to cause chaos, because like all motherboards will need updates. Or they don't check the timestamp of the certificate and just like use the old unsecure one. Maybe they just don't care about that. But like to use like the new certificate, they will have to update actual hardware, which like, I don't think any motherboard vendor has probably ever tested that, because like, why would you? Like, this is just like the Microsoft cert has a lifetime of like 10 years. You're just not going to worry about that. And like the presentation there has like some great slides with like, they know there are systems that hard brick when they try to update the certificate. So that sounds kind of scary. I'll be really excited to see what happens here. We've already seen like Microsoft likes rolling back stuff when it kind of breaks. So, like maybe this blows up and they roll it back a couple days later. I don't know, but like, yeah, that's gonna be good to look at. The outlook there, if we manage to roll off these certificates, is that we can do version-based security. Because the very first thing a bootloader can do is check its own security version against like something the BIOS provides something called like secure storage, where like only the bootloader can access it. So you can do rollback protection. This is actually a thing that exists. For Linux, this is called SBAT. If any of you like ran into like SBAT secure boot errors recently, this is exactly the reason here. With like the 2024.08 update, Microsoft then pushed some SBAT rules, which says only grub versions newer than X are allowed to boot. And what grub first thing does is it checks like, okay, I know my own version is version 2. I see in this memory it says like I shouldn't boot if I'm not at least version 3. So I probably have a bug. I'm just going to abort booting. This is kind of like the idea here, and then you don't need to do any signature revocation at all. You can just like bump the security version. Microsoft has something similar to that planned. But to fix the downgrade stuff, you need to like roll the certs once, so all old bootloaders are no longer allowed. Yeah, I just like some very, very quick slides for protecting yourself. Unattended unlock is just insecure. There are many, many attacks against it. I was amazed that software only was possible. I figured you need to do hardware. But just if you just set a PIN, like have some kind of like knowledge which you or some other token which you have to enter to the device. So unattended unlocks just isn't possible. Unattended unlocks are probably always going to be broken in one way or another. If you want to look at this hardware stuff, I kind of like mentioned in the beginning where you like actually open the device and look at buses. This video by Stack Smashing, amazing. He just basically speed runs how fast can you get into a laptop, sniff the TPM. Because like remember, TPM stores the key. And like if the TPM is like a separate chip, I can just like look at the motherboard at the bus to see like the key in plain text because like it's encrypted. Because why would it be encrypted? I don't know. It can be nowadays. I know there's parental encryption, but it by default, as far as I know, just isn't. Software vulnerability is also out there. The one I love the most was like this reset PTR registers thing. There was like a bug where you could put the laptop to sleep to S3 something. And like upon waking up, PCRs are back to zero. And then you can just put in there whatever you want and like fake the C-Qubit that way is still fixed now. Yeah, lots of potential softwares. Again, this BitLocker text repo has other attacks which are also possible right now. Like this isn't the only bug. Even if you like disable Pixieboot, I haven't dug into the other ones, but like according to the repo, there are like 2-3 other ones which you could also downgrade into and exploit. Go play some CTF, guys. All of this was only because I started looking at real-world CTF. I looked at this challenge, and like this challenge nuts night me. I fell into this rabbit hole and basically just clawed my way out of that, learned a whole ton in the beginning, and I hope managed to teach you some about it. Really can recommend that. If you're from Germany, less than 25, 6 years old, go play CSGG, Cyber Security Challenge Germany. This is the way I got started. Amazing way to get started. If you want to reach me, ask questions now. I'm on Matrix, and I'll probably also like float around here if you have any questions after the talk.
Yeah, thank you so much, Thomas. It was a wonderful talk. We are a little bit above time, so we will try to make room for some short questions. I have my fellow angel out here who is walking around with the mic. We are very crowded this stage, so please be kind to each other and make room. Is there anybody who would like to ask Thomas a question? Please raise your hand. We also, this talk is being streamed. So if you are watching it from online and you have a question, you're also very welcome to write in our Mastodon or IRC channel and use the hashtag 38C3 at the signal agency monitoring that. And the first question, I think we're ready for it.
So I'm playing a little bit advocate of the devil here, but what if Microsoft would not have allowed any third-party operating systems? Would this exploit still be possible?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. If you allowed third-party operating
systems? Microsoft would not have allowed Linux to boot, so no third parties.
Then that exploit would not have been possible in the way I exploited it, but there are a ton of like Windows drivers out there which are also signed, which have like bugs so you can also read memory. So like the way there would be to like do the same exploit, boot into a Windows from network where you are admin, load a vulnerable kernel driver, and also like scan the memory. So like the attack path would be different, but the result would be the same. So like it would still be vulnerable.
Thank you for the answer. Do we have the next question? The signal angel?
Yeah, the internet wants to know, you said you could disable the network stack in the BIOS,
yep.
But couldn't the attacker just reset that by clearing the CMOS?
Yeah, that's a good point. But then you need to open the device again. But of course, yeah. If you like reset the CMOS, this device in particular, actually, if you set a supervisor password, you are not getting that out ever. You need an exploit against the UEFI to like get the supervisor password out of there. It's so, like, you can't actually, without another exploit, reset this kind of stuff, even when removing the CMOS battery. On a lot of other systems, though, it is possible to just like reset the BIOS, but then it gets really annoying because like all of these revocation lists get reset, and like, you need to have the exact revocation list in the BIOS because those are part of the PCR registers. So like you can reproduce the state, but it's harder.
I think we have time for just one more question, if there's a question here in the room. Otherwise, we have one from the internet.
The internet wants to know if you could protect or block this attack by just setting an insecure pin, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or something.
The TPM, if you set a pin, actually does kind of like brute force protection. So like the TPM, in this is like hardware in your device that kind of makes sure you have at most, however you want to configure it, like 10 tries per minute or something. But then if you set the pin like 1, 2, 3, 4, an attacker can still like brute force through like common word lists and like get the pin in like whatever a day. But like due to this hardware protections, the password can be a lot weaker than it would normally have to be if you had put it on the internet somewhere.
I think that was it. Thank you so much. Can we have another big applause for Thomas?